Prime Day es el 16 y 17 de julio. Con las ofertas épicas exclusivas para miembros Prime, recibe el reconocimiento que tanto mereces.
¡Wow! Gracias. Ni siquiera preparé un discurso.
Quisiera agradecer a mi familia, que siempre necesita cosas. También a Sam, mi repartidor, por entregarme todas mis ofertas increíbles tan rápido. ¡Te adoro, Sam! ¡Mua!
Compra ofertas en electrónicos, hogar y más este Prime Day, del 16 al 17 de julio.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the Yanks Go Yard podcast with Adam Weinrib and Thomas Carinante.
Welcome to the Yanks Go Yard podcast. I am Adam Weinrib, joined today by pinch hitter Peter Dewey. The New York Yankees are 8-2 after playing a first 10 games their season crafted by Satan himself at Houston, at Arizona, home against Vlad Jr. and the Blue Jays, who always give the Yankees trouble in New York, but for some reason not in Toronto. And guess what? Going pretty well so far. We're on here live 2 o'clock Eastern, just like we are every Monday and every Thursday. You can also find us on all podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, wherever you do get your podcast. And if you're joining us live at 2 o'clock, don't worry, we will be wrapped up by the time the eclipse passes through New York. Don't stare directly at it without glasses unless you want to have Angel Hernandez's eyesight. Peter, welcome to the show. Angel tried real hard to derail this Yankees series against the Jays with some absolutely bizarre posturing and peacocking behind the plate yesterday, trying to ruin Luis Gil's life. Somehow didn't perceive that the Blue Jays starting pitcher Bowden Francis tripped off the mound and then short-armed a curveball to Gleyber Torres, called that a strike. About as wonky as it gets, especially after that home opener, but the Yankees have won another home, another series, first home series of the year, 3-0 in series, one sweep and two series wins, and this is the first Yankees home series win over a division rival since September 22nd to 25th, 2022. Against the Boston Red Sox. Not last September, but September prior. That is crazy, and it's over. And they did it the hard way, too, dropping the first one, winning the next two. Looked like it, I was going to be able to say winning the next two handily until the end of game two. They didn't at all. Not handily by any means. Real tight. But they did take two of these. You got to feel pretty good.
Oh, yeah, you got to feel great. I mean, this is about as good of a start as you could have asked for, especially knowing Gerrit Cole wasn't going to pitch. I think that's if you told me they were going to go 8-2, I would have been, sign me up every single time. I mean, to sweep Houston, I think, you know, I've seen that the stuff, you can't win the division in April, obviously, or win the AL in April. But I'm not of the school of thought that you can lose it, but you can certainly gain some confidence in it, and it's going to help you down the rest of the season. We've seen, you know, 2 years ago when they got off to that great start, they really floundered in the second half. They played below 500 ball, but they were still able to finish second in the AL because they got off to such a strong start. And, you know, when you're relatively healthy, which for now the Yankees are, you kind of have to win these games at the beginning of the season, because who knows if Aaron Judge goes down for a couple weeks, or if Juan Soto goes down for a couple weeks, what happens to the roster? So, you know, this is a fantastic start. You get four against Houston, where maybe now some confidence going forward when you face them, because it just seems like every time we've played them the last, at this point, 10 years, it feels like, it's just like it's a nightmare. So that was huge. And I think they saw some guys that we probably didn't expect to step up in some big spots. Santana yesterday came through with a 5-out save. You know, Anthony Volpe's been fantastic to start this season. It's been a different guy kind of every night. Oswaldo Cabrera has been fantastic. Like, where they have, it hasn't been where we've seen in previous years where it's like, well, if Aaron Judge plays great, the Yankees are going to win. And if he doesn't, they have no chance. And it's been so many different guys stepping up, and they've won games in different ways. They've had some close games they've been able to hold down. They've won some games that they've kind of pulled away. The pitching has been good some nights. The hitting's been good some nights. It's been a very exciting start to the season, because you're kind of seeing there's a lot of potential here. I think more potential than I thought personally coming into the season.
Yeah, they haven't even really been clicking. Stanton did next to nothing until Saturday, and now all of a sudden his numbers look pretty representative. Anthony Rizzo, not quite there yet. Alex Verdugo, there was a little chatter yesterday about how he was unlucky, but in reality, it's mostly soft contact for him. The, you know, OPS in the 400s feels about right if you've been watching most of his ABs this year. But even so, Cabrera, guys like Volpe, John Birdie hasn't even really contributed offensively yet, but defensively, he's shown you how valuable he can be. Trent Grisham hasn't gotten much run because they're sticking with a consistent lineup, which is crazy. We'll talk more about the specifics of this past series after I give you a little ad read from DraftKings. It's also important because the run differential is not quite there yet, right? They're winning a lot of close games, so you're going to have some people say, well, all right, how dominant can they really be, the 8-2 Yankees, plus 9 or plus 10 or whatnot, because they're winning all these one-run games. I would argue that winning these one-run games is still valuable, and like you said, they're banking wins that you can't take away for when the sledding gets a little bit tougher. But Yankee fans, if you believe in this team and you want to bet on them or you want to bet against them, you want to go anti, go a different way with the trends, DraftKings is offering a fantastic sign-up bonus for all new users, not just Yankee fans, though. Like at all apps, it should be restricted to just Yankee fans. What's the point of having non-Yankee fans on any app? New customers can place a $5 first bet on any sport to instantly claim 150 in bonus bets when you sign up with our code YanksGoYard. Best part is you'll receive your rewards even if your first bet loses. Using our code YanksGoYard not only gets you these bonuses, but it also directly supports our podcast. If you're considering signing up for DraftKings, make sure to use the code YanksGoYard to maximize your first bets. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for the full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. Yanks, go ahead and win the second and third game of this series. About as juiced up as I've ever been for a home opener, especially with Juan Soto and Marcus Stroman on the mound, making sure that everybody in the building brought the energy. It felt like they couldn't be starting on a better foot. I am usually pessimistic, not optimistic, and I was pounding the win button that day. And then lo and behold, not only do they lose, they get shut out 3-0. It's the first home opener shutout for the Yankees since 1967. And plenty of bad offenses the last couple of years, last 15 years or so. Shocking that they haven't managed to accomplish that. I remember one home opener where Dellin Betances like threw a bunt away. I was surprised that wasn't a shutout loss. But apparently this is the worst home opener in 50 years. So that was great. But they shook it off, recovered nicely. Vlad Jr., the story on Saturday, shushes everybody in the crowd when he hits a solo home run to bring the game from 9-2 to 9-3. And then bunch of Blue Jays fans jump out of the woodwork and say, it's a celebration, find a new slam. Would you be mad if Juan Soto did this or somebody else? We don't need to be having that conversation. But in the blink of an eye, while people are trying to, you know, smack Blue Jays fans away, all of a sudden the stupid game is 9-8. We don't even really get to have this discourse. That's a shame because I hate missing out on some good old discourse. But they win a nail biter on Saturday, and we all hopefully forget about the shushing, although we're going to bring it back up and laugh about it now in retrospect. And then yesterday's game, take a 6-1, or I guess 5-1 is the 5-1 is the largest lead they had before Toronto started chipping away. You take that 5-1 lead with no bullpen remaining because Jonathan Loaisiga down for the year. Ian Hamilton goes excessively on Saturday night. Clay Holmes comes in and bails him out a little bit. I'm sure they would have gone to Holmes if they had to, but luckily they didn't. And you wonder how they're going to piece that game together when they're going to Jake Cousins in the fifth inning. Somehow they managed to, and it doesn't even really get that sweaty after Oswaldo Cabrera's error. So we'll break this down similarly to the way we did the Houston and Arizona series. But generalized thoughts, Peter, before we get too far into it, things you liked to see. I guess we'll talk about the sweaty moments, but I think most of those came on Saturday because even the Friday game was relatively low tension. He just didn't put guys on base or take good swings.
Yeah, I think one of the things I was just most excited about was you mentioned it earlier in the pod, though, it's Stanton getting going over the weekend.
Yeah,
he had gotten off to a brutal start, and then to see him hit that grand slam yesterday, just that was like vintage moonshot Stanton, where it was like, okay, maybe this is something that kind of gets his confidence going, gets him rolling, because, you know, we've seen him play great in stretches for the Yankees, and then we've seen him be hurt and play poorly. And last year was an absolute disaster between the injuries and the him just struggling at the plate overall. So I'm hoping for him that, and for the Yankees, because they need him. As much as there's plenty of things you can say about Giancarlo Stanton, he's overpaid, whatever you want to say, they need him, because having him playing well, the protection it gives Judge and Soto in that lineup is insane. Because if you have Stanton hitting 250 with 30 bombs, you can't just pitch to the guy like he's, you know, some random fifth hitter, sixth hitter, whatever it ends up being. So I think, you know, having him get going, that to me was really exciting, because we'd seen other guys step up, but, you know, it was nice to see him actually put something together. And then I think overall, Marcus Stroman's performance at home and through the start of the season, but especially at home, was awesome to see. I know they lost the game. It really got dampened out by the fact that they lost the game, but he was lights out. The crowd's feeding off of him. I know I said a few weeks ago that I was super excited for him kind of getting this chance in the home opener. I thought he delivered in exactly the way that we like hoped he would. So excited to kind of see him going forward in this season. I really think, you know, that's an underrated pickup across baseball this offseason. I think he's a very, very good pitcher, and the Yankees are kind of going to reap the benefits early in the season so far with how he's played.
Yeah, you cannot ask for more. He acquitted himself really well in that game. And again, the offense just did not show up. That's why there was so much Stanton pessimism, because if he's not hitting Yusei Kikuchi, a lefty who's solid, not great. I called him a mid-tier lefty in some article I wrote over the weekend, and a Blue Jays fan was like, excuse me, mid-tier? He was 29th in ERA last year. And I was like, yeah, how big do you think the top tier is? We're going 30 deep? That's top tier? What are you talking about? Kikuchi's fine. He's a good pitcher, but Giancarlo Stanton's in there to mash lefties. He's hitting cleanup so he can mash lefties. And he looked overmatched by Kikuchi in that game, who obviously was throwing the ball well. None of the Yankees hit him. But that's why the pessimism probably hit its peak on Stanton in that game, because here's a lefty. He's, you know, fastball slider guy, but you've seen him before. He's not, you know, not showing you anything you haven't seen before. And Stanton was just getting overmatched. But yeah, your happiest moment of the series, that Stanton Grand Slam. Definitely the loudest noise I made in this series was that Stanton Grand Slam. I couldn't believe that he managed to do that. And as John Boy pointed out, he had 4 pulled fastball hits last year, and he's got 2 this year, and it's April 8th. So that's very encouraging. If you want to believe, at least some of the changes, the tangible changes he made to his body and approach have already shown value. My happiest moment of the weekend honestly might have been, I mean, look, the Stan Granny is probably the runaway winner, but honestly, Anthony Volpe stealing second and third and then scoring on Oswaldo Cabrera's single late in game 3 is my second place finisher, or, you know, if maybe not, it might be number 1 overall, because I'll be honest, I'm a fan with heart palpitations. I don't enjoy taking an early huge lead, because all that means is 3 hours of anxiety as they try to protect it. Even early in the season, I was like, all right, I'll probably be immune to this. But of course, 6-0 is 6-1, and then it's 6-2, and it's 8-2, 9-2. You think you could pack it in a little bit, and all of a sudden it's like 9-4, second and third, nobody out in the seventh. And you're like, this is going to get hairy. 9-5 in the ninth. You're like, they got to be able to protect that, right? Nope, still tough. So I didn't have a lot of fun on Saturday night. Had to pull up the game at the bar on a phone. Because we were at a bar that was exclusively, they were just showing the Final Four, and I get it. Like, you know, the UConn, that's also sort of a New York team, and obviously you're going to get votes for that over the Yankees Blue Jays. But yeah, it's like, I think we put it on the phone when Davis Schneider doubled in the ninth, and suddenly it's second and third. The tying runs are coming up with one out. You're like, this is dirt. This just isn't what I asked for. It's like 10:15. I should be enjoying a Guinness. I shouldn't be already thinking about Clay Holmes and slider command. So I had very little fun there. I'm glad they won, but most of the fun was Sunday, especially after they'd already secured one game in the series. And Volpe just a completely different hitter at this point in time compared to what he was last year, when I don't think I was in the minority of people who said, I'm shocked that he ended this season with 20 homers, 20 steals, because that's something you could put on your mantle. Something that deserves recognition for rookie season. It's not easy to do that. But at the end of the year, I felt deeply empty about what he'd accomplished. Most of those steals came earlier in the year. Selling out for power, he had a big power surge in the mid-summer, and that's fantastic. But a lot of swing and miss, a lot of empty games, you know, a lot of empty box scores. By the end of the year, when the Yankees were flatlined and almost out of the playoffs, I would check the box score just to be like, did Volpe get it? You know, I'd be out for seven innings and I'd be like, all right, they're losing 4-1. Not shocking, but has Volpe done anything? Nope. 0-3 with two Ks. It'd just be repeated checks of these empty box scores. And it has you thinking like, okay, I know there's an adjustment period, but it's the end of year one. And we're still seeing a guy who doesn't look anything like what he looked like in the minor leagues. This is another development failure in getting over the hump from double A to the bigs, because he barely played at triple A. And all of a sudden this year, the work that he did this offseason looks like a completely different guy. Looks like the guy that prospect experts and minor league fans alike told us was coming, that I didn't see last year for more than a couple of weeks at a time. So we're only 10 games in. He's not going to hit 400 this year. But the effort, the ability to just continue slapping balls in a right field when you give him that hole, and then to take second and take third using all his tools, I'm energized every time I see him do anything. And Austin Wells, another guy who hasn't found it yet. Verdugo has not found it yet. You're going to need those contributions from the bottom of the lineup at some point. And it's been Cabrera and Volpe not just contributing, but as arguably the team's two best hitters, even eclipsing Juan Soto's hot start to begin the year. So that was the moment I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, Volpe's been fantastic. And it's he's a guy that I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, you almost, I don't want to say he has to play well this season, but like, if he has another season where it's like, then you start to get really concerned about maybe this guy isn't what we thought he was. So I'm excited that I don't want to have those conversations. You know what I mean? I don't want to have to think about that. So it's been great to see him playing well to start the season. He's five. I mean, what, he was 5-for-11 in the series. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's fantastic. That's about all you can ask. He stole a couple bags. Like, I mean, about all you can ask over three games.
Yes. Well, let's get into the worst moments of the weekend, just because we got to, because it's a Yankees podcast. I mean, what's the, every fan base is self-loathing, by the way. Like, I got these Red Sox fans self-loathing on Twitter, and I always want to tell them to shut up. And, oh, we're 7-3. How are little old us 7-3? We just threatened to boycott. You know, like, this happens to you every couple of years, like clockwork. And I always want to tell them to shut up. And then I remember that we're the New York Yankees, and I still look at all these games waiting for things to go wrong. So it's fandom. Like, I don't want to watch Red Sox fans doing it, but I get why they do it. And here we are. I mean, 9-2, Vlad leads off the seventh with a home run. I don't care. I'm not thinking about that at all. I get on the PATH train, and it's, 10 minutes goes by, and they still don't have an out. Like, and that's when my sensor goes up. Like, you got to be kidding me. Because I trust the bullpen. I trust Hamilton and Holmes, but I don't really know how to get there at this point, and they barely do. And I'm anxious. They get out of that inning, and it's 9-5 going to the ninth. And I get alerts on my watch. Like, I get Twitter notifications for scoring plays, and I have Talking Yanks sent to my phone. And I walk into the bar, and the last one I get is Gleyber Torres legs out a double, which is the bottom of the eighth. And probably 20 minutes go by, and I'm like, why haven't I gotten another notification? Like, we should be pretty close to the end of this game. And I check my phone and notice that there are no outs in the ninth. And that's when I'm kind of like, all right, this is real now. I have to, like, it reminded me of the Clay Holmes game in Miami last year when the season was pretty much over already. But then you're like, all right, at least we'll win this Sunday game. And then it's 7-1-7-2, 7-2-7-3. I won't check for a little while. Oh, we don't have any outs in the ninth inning, and they're actually going to blow this game and, like, blow it pretty quickly. Felt that way, especially with George Springer coming up as the lead run at the end of this game. So I think Kevin Biggio is maybe the Blue Jays MVP in this series too. Couldn't get him out. Course extends that game. Ernie Clement, another guy I never want to hear from again. David Schneider, don't want to hear that name. I'm sure I will. So I think the Springer at-bat specifically was just the, like, I can't believe we're really in this situation and I have to be this invested in this game. But what was that moment for you?
Yeah, I just think it was the entire ninth inning. It just felt they got to, they're up 9-5, and you're kind of just like, all right, there's no way that this game gets close. Like, it was 9-2, and then got to 9-5. I was like, all right, come on. Like, I was like, we're good. They got what they were going to get.
Yeah.
And then that entire ninth inning was just like pulling teeth. Because all I'm thinking about is, like, this would be such a horrible way after you played so great on the road to come home and you get shut out in the home opener and then you blow a huge lead the next time. I was like, this is a nightmare. Like, this can't happen. But I mean, they got out of it. So it was fine. It's just, it was a scenario where I was in the same boat. I was watching the final. I chalked up a Yankees win. I thought we're good. I was like, I don't have to sit here and sweat out every pitch. There's no way they blow this game. And they almost did, but they didn't. So I'll take that. But every time one of these happens, it's Yankees fans are so spoiled. And I put myself obviously in that group. It's like, I just think back to like my entire childhood growing up. It was like, oh, we're up in the ninth inning. The game's over. Nobody gets a hit off of Mariano Rivera. And like now it's like, we're so far removed from that. I'm like, God, I hate that this is a sweat so much more than it ever was when I was a kid. It's crazy because when I was a kid, you like don't even realize as much about like, and now I'm like, I'm so much more invested in understanding so much more than I was when I was 10 years old. And I'm like, this is a nightmare. Like, can we just go back to when the ninth inning was automatic? Like, that was great. Those were good times. But that was a sweat. This Springer coming up, it would have been just the most typical way for the Yankees to lose a game if he had gotten a big hit there. But hey, we'll take it the way it ended.
Prime Day es el 16 y 17 de julio. Con las ofertas épicas exclusivas para miembros Prime, recibe el reconocimiento que tanto mereces.
Wow, gracias. Ni siquiera preparé un discurso.
Quisiera agradecer a mi familia, que siempre necesita cosas. También a Sam, mi repartidor, por entregarme todas mis ofertas increíbles tan rápido. ¡Te adoro, Sam! ¡Mua!
Compra ofertas en electrónicos, hogar y más este Prime Day, del 16 al 17 de julio.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I mean, he actually went down pretty harmlessly. And so it was kind of like, oh, that's pretty weird to see. It does make you feel like the vibes change. No, there's nothing I hate more than, and we almost got two of them in a week. And we didn't get any of them in a week, which is great. Blowing big leads, my number one, hurts me. It's like an arrow to the heart in any sport. Mm-hmm. Like, coming up, I think we just passed the 2-year anniversary of North Carolina basketball being up 15 at halftime in the championship game. And me going, man, I would love to just sim through the second half. It'd be great to just win without really thinking about it. And then like 2 minutes into the second half, the lead is 4. And you're like, oh, okay. I mean, at least they blew that instantaneously. So I do remember being like, all right, could we just, like, the halftime show felt like it was taking forever. I was like, could we just go? And then like 12-1 run in 2 minutes and 20 seconds. I was like, oh, okay, so they don't even have a lead anymore. Great. But whenever the Yankees are nursing a big lead for 2 hours, 45 minutes, it's interminable. So I hate that, but I mean, this happens to everybody. We're just describing baseball, but I hate when an error factors in significantly to a blown lead or a tight game. And we had Volpe in extra innings in Arizona. The game was over until it wasn't. We had Oswaldo Cabrera yesterday, first and second, one out. Good job, Nick Birdie, inducing a grounder, and he just drops it. So from that moment, you're like, Vlad Jr. is up with the bases loaded with a chance to take the lead with a grand slam. Somehow none of these things actually transpired, but you did have sweaty moments last weekend, this weekend. This 9-2 game becomes 9-8. And Cabrera sets him up for sort of a disastrous frame there. And, you know, the middle relievers who they're testing out don't exactly have the best command and control right now. So it was not shocking that there were guys on base, but you want to do all you can to prevent it. And that error really hurt. But Saturday's game still takes the cake. Does not get more nerve-wracking than that. Shouldn't have been, but absolutely was. And it was. I didn't want to alienate everybody at the bar by putting the Yankees game on the Yes app on a tiny phone and crowd a bar stool. But unfortunately, I had to do that. Let's talk about a moment we might have missed or that might have gotten lost in the shuffle this weekend. I'm going to give credit to Dennis Santana here, who I'm not going to go crazy and say, I've seen enough. Yankees have done it again. Dennis Santana, career journeyman and former Met, former Dodger, is it. He's the solution. I don't know how long the Dennis Santana magic is going to last. I do know that in the home opener, it was weird that they let him get out of the eighth and then tried to steal more outs from him in the ninth, and he ends up throwing 35-plus pitches, and that game gets out of reach because the people who follow him can't throw strikes. I thought that was odd, but he erased five outs, including Vladdy and the heart of the order yesterday pretty effortlessly. And yes, it was 6-3 and then it became 8-3, but that is someone I'd be interested in trying in the Loaisiga role, at least for a little bit under Matt Blake's tutelage. The slider is real. And I'll give Nick Birdie credit too for getting past that Oswaldo error. Bases loaded, Vladdy up, and he induces a broken bat soft grounder. And that's the only run that scores that inning. Picking up Austin Wells in this game too. Jake Cousins picks up Austin Wells when he drops a foul pop-up to extend an inning with traffic on the bases and a lead dwindling. So credit to those guys who are not Holmes and Hamilton and don't belong at the top of that trust tree yet, but are going to have to eat important innings, at least until the Yankees get their sea legs here and figure out which bullpen pieces stay long-term. And I just want to give credit to those guys this weekend. None of them were perfect, and none of them were, like, eye-opening to the point where I was like, they showed me something. Enough is enough. Don't get anybody at the deadline. You know, I'm a Jake Cousins guy. Not a single one of them was that good, but all of them did their job, and so I want to tip my cap to those guys.
Yeah, I like that. I think kind of goes to they're going to have to really piece things together for probably a while here, if we're being honest, before any kind of deal is. So, you know, anything we can get from any of those guys, it's a positive. They will take that all day. Because I honestly, when they went to Santana yesterday, I was like, there's no way he's pitching the ninth too. And then obviously it worked out. So I think it's a definitely a positive takeaway for me. I think the moment, I think I wouldn't say it's just a moment we might have missed. We alluded to it earlier. I just think Volpe's series, I thought he played fantastic. He was 5-for-11. He stole three bags. Like, I just think right now he may not be hitting, you know, like last year it felt like when you heard the Anthony Volpe, it was like, oh, he hit a home run today. Now it's like, no, he's getting two hits and he stole a bag and he scored a run. And like, I will take that. He doesn't have to hit home like 30 home runs. Like, just be on base, because I think the thing for him, which it's been great that he's hitting over 400 now, is like, he's most dangerous when he's on first base. Get him on first base, get the run game going. Like, it doesn't have to be, you know, you're hitting home runs all the time. And I feel like that's like an old take with the way baseball is going now. But like, you need that guy on base and creating havoc. It's going to get pitchers out of their rhythm. It's going to help the other guys in the order. And I think, you know, for him too, just confidence wise, early on in the season, this is huge to have him get off to such a hot start. Him and Cabrera, both those guys getting off to a hot start, I think is just big for the Yankees. And it's another reason why, you know, maybe they don't need DJ LeMahieu right now. Maybe it's we take our sweet time for bringing him back, because we got the young guys rolling. I think at the end of the day, like, if the Yankees are going to go anywhere, like, some of these young guys between Wells, Cabrera, Volpe, like, they're going to have to make a leap. Like, you look at all the young guys that they had when they went into the half year, 1 year rebuild. And it's like, Glaber's really the only one remaining in there. And he was by far the best. And Glaber, I've been very pro Glaber the last few years. He's been fantastic. I thought last year and the year before he played great. And so it's like, you need somebody else out of these guys to be the next Glaber Torres. Somebody has to come in and be able to be an everyday guy. They don't have to be an all-star, but they have to be a guy where you're like, we can count on this guy every day. He's going to hit 275, might hit 20 home runs, going to play good enough defense. Although Glaber doesn't always do that, but like, give me something out of one of these young guys. And I think, you know, both Volpe and Cabrera getting off to a hot start, like, hopefully the Yankees stick with them too. We've seen them give up on way too many young guys in the past. We need these young guys to play well so they don't do that.
Jason Dominguez will be back too. Like that's another guy who could make a further leap, but it's hard to leap from where he was last year. But I guess he's going to take his time as well, as long as things work out, you know, to maybe start your rehab at AAA. You could use the reps, and if this team is still rolling, I think we're fine with that. It's another one of those things that felt like a death knell last year, that surgery and the Garrett Cole, no surgery yet. He's rehabbing and starting to throw a little bit, apparently. But those two things are two pieces of news that were seismic when you heard it. I feel like I hit by a 1,000-pound weight, and all of a sudden the Yankees are 8-2, and now I'm struggling to think. I'm like, oh, yeah, right, Garrett Cole has to rehab. Like, I forgot he was even a part of the rotation. It's crazy how fast the baseball season moves, considering it's so damn long. And that's why people have to enjoy these stretches where they're 8-2 and where they're getting bounces and breaks. Like, you don't – they played great in Houston. How many 4-game series in Houston do you sweep, even if you play great? Like 2 out of 100? Like, that's ridiculous. And I guess the Astros are 3-7 right now, and two of their wins have been Ronel Blanco, their fifth starter. And he threw a no-hitter and then started last night's game against the Rangers with 6-plus no-hit innings. I think he got to 15 and a third no-hit innings before he gave up a hit. Baseball is absurd, and that's an awful start for a Houston team that we all know is better than that. But that's why you got to – the Yankees did not bury them, like you said. What did they accomplish? Technically, they already got home field advantage over Houston in a playoff series if they happen to play one another, because they've taken the season series. If they have the same record at the end of the year, the Yankees win the tiebreaker. So that's nuts. I mean, you have to have the same record as them or better than them to maintain that. But that's crazy. They already have the tiebreaker. Yeah. But yeah, they didn't bury Houston. Houston's not going away. They are not going to finish the season 146-16. But 8-2, we're now 1/16th of the way through the season. Feels great to be there, and they've banked wins that nobody can take away. Now, thinking a little bit more about the future, in the home opener, the story of the home opener was obviously Juan Soto and Marcus Stroman and this pomp and circumstance. And it didn't work out, and that game was extremely forgettable. But Soto did all he could to make himself feel like a lifelong Yankee. And I think I felt in January, February, March that too many non-Yankee fans were just writing off a potential future in the Bronx because of Scott Boras and because the contract is going to be rich. And just there were some Brian Cashman quotes getting twisted around by Yankee haters and people looking for an angle that were basically like, he's going to be here for 1 year and then we'll see how it plays out. And everybody was like, oh my God, he's admitting it. And it's like, no, he's actually just saying that he's under contract for 1 year. Like, I don't know. People were really doing, you know, gymnastics, you know, bends and stretches to somehow turn these quotes into like, oh, Yankees are doomed. And it wasn't just Mets fans. It was people across the country doing like, oh my God, Brian Cashman is so stupid. He traded for Juan Soto for only a year, as if like it's not good to have 1 year of Juan Soto anyway.
You win a World Series, nobody's going to care.
Could win the World, absolutely could win the World Series too, based on what we've already seen. But who knows? Again, I don't know. I think you give yourself a better chance to win the World Series by acquiring Juan Soto. That's the dumbest thing too. So many owners and GMs combos right now are just trying to sneak into the playoffs as a wild card team. And they get people criticize other teams for just trying to build 86 win rosters. And maybe you get lucky in October. And then Brian Cashman trades pitching pieces that he maybe doesn't feel like he needs as much as he needs Juan Soto for literally Juan Soto. And then it's like, what are you doing? Now you don't have Michael King, you idiot. It's like, I don't know, man. We had Michael King last year. That team sucked. It was an 82-80 team. I was the worst Yankee team in the modern era. And they go ahead and get future Hall of Famer Juan Soto, and it's like, you're going to miss Johnny Brito. Laugh my ass off. And they can't win. And so they go ahead and get Juan Soto, who, even if he's only here for a year, I'd be happy with that. It's a trade you have to make. But opening day, he comes up to Empire State of Mind. He unveils his cleats, which have Soto Loves New York on the heel, the Yankee Stadium subway stop. They have the pinstripes. Look, either he is making himself the most beloved one-year Yankee of all time, or he's damn comfortable here. And the roll call where he sort of bowed to the crowd, the loudest roll calls I've heard on TV broadcasts in ever were for Soto all weekend long. He's not coming back unless they give him a big fat check. We all know that. That is not a surprise. But I don't think people from outside New York gave enough credit and credence to all of the statements he's made before the season and all of the things he's already shown and done, going to the Dominican Academy, being a Yankees ambassador before even playing a game for the team. And he has the most New York Yankees welcome to Yankee Stadium of any import I can remember over the past 20 years. Clearly, he wants to be here. All things being equal, I think he would come back here in a heartbeat. All things being slightly unequal, I think he would too. But I'd love to know your thoughts on the start of the Soto experience with the Yankees. I'm not guaranteeing he's a Yankee long term, but a lot of people are guaranteeing he won't be. And I'd like them to actually open their eyes and look at the evidence presented so far.
Yeah, I mean, we can sit here and say, you know, the money and whatever, but like if the Yankees pony up the money, like why, and they have a good season this year with him on the team, why wouldn't he come back? Like, I don't, like, what is the allure? Like, the Mets may offer more money. What is the allure if the Mets stink this year? Why is he going to go?
The Yankees, like, just clearly don't intend for him to leave. I've read so much discourse. Yeah.
That's the other thing. It's not like they basically made this trade and like, well, we're not going to pay him this off. Like, they haven't said anything like that. And to me, them not going after Blake Snell being off the market, Jordan Montgomery off the market, that tells me maybe they are saving that money for Juan Soto. Because had they made one of those moves, it would have made it a lot more difficult to make a Juan Soto move. But now that you didn't make one of those moves, hopefully Gerrit Cole is back. I really hope he's back. But if Gerrit Cole somehow doesn't come back and you didn't make one of those moves and you let Juan Soto walk, I don't know how they can justify that. Like, the Yankees have done a lot of things that I don't know how they can justify, but I really don't know how you can justify that. It would be horrible, horrible optics. The same way it would have been horrible, horrible optics if they didn't re-sign Aaron Judge after he hit 60 home runs. Like, that, again, it would have been horrible optics. So, like, I can't see a scenario where they're at least not in on him this offseason, like, to say that he's just, it's a one-year thing. And I think the Yankee fans, I think there's plenty of fan bases. Yeah, Yankee fans can suck if you're an opposing fan, but if you're a Yankee fan and you're a Yankee player, Yankee fans are pretty awesome. If you play well, they are pretty awesome. Like, Joey Gallo hates Yankee fans. Well, Joey Gallo has hit over 217 years at this point. Like, he stinks. But Juan Soto is going to do Juan Soto things, and Yankee fans are going to appreciate that Juan Soto is doing Juan Soto things a lot more than a lot of other fan bases out there. It could be much worse. So I think that is a huge thing. And like you said, like, he's playing into it. Like, and how many athletes have we seen, like, between LA, New York, like these big cities, they want to be here. And if you succeed here, you know that you are going to be put on a pedestal higher than you would in basically, especially in baseball. If you succeed as a Yankee, you will be put on a pedestal higher than any other franchise in the sport. And Juan Soto is the type of guy where if he does that, like, he's probably already on his way to first ballot Hall of Famer, but it won't even be a question at the end of the day. So to say that they're like, oh, that he's out is crazy to me. And it also, it's his decision too. Like, if he wants to come back, they can figure out a way to make him, have him come back. And the Boris stuff scared me until I watched him fumble his two biggest clients this offseason. I am not scared of, like, outside of the Mets, I really don't know who's ponying up the Juan Soto money. After Washington refused to do it, San Diego refused to do it. I don't know how the Dodgers would do it. They might try, but I don't know how they would do it. Like, after the Mets, who else is going to do it? And if it becomes a Mets-Yankees thing, I would be very surprised to see the Yankees not put the money out there to match.
Yeah, I'll bow and I'll apologize to everybody if Steve Cohen just outbids the Yankees by $100 million. Or if Hal Steinbrenner doesn't close this the way he closed Judge from overseas, I would just be very, very surprised. And it might not be the Yankees at the end of the day. And then we'll all have to regroup and move on. But way, way, way too many people are twisting that Cashman quote and just pretending for their own self-satisfaction that the Yankees don't have any intention of bringing Soto back and the Yankees don't want to win. I mean, spoiler alert, they acquired Juan Soto because it gives them a better chance of winning this year. And they acquired Juan Soto because when you have a chance to get your hands on a generational talent, you do it. And way too many cynical, sometimes it's fans, I think mostly it's enemies, but way too many cynical people are like, the Yankees just don't spend anymore. It's laughable if you think Soto's coming back. Do you have any idea how much money he's going to make? No, I do. And you know who else knows that? The New York Yankees. So worst case scenario, you've Juan Soto for one very important season. Exactly. Not a bad worst case scenario.
I know I've said this to you before. If they win the World Series, that's why I was pro, like, go get Blake Snell. If you win the World Series this year, a lot of like, the future, you won the World Series. That's at this point, that's what we're asking for. It's been 15 years. That sounds so spoiled, but like, you're also the New York Yankees. It's been 15 years. You win a World Series this year. Like, obviously you want Soto back long-term, but like the move was the right move if you win the World Series. So I credit them for at least trying to make the most of the Aaron Judge, Garrett Cole prime. I think they owed it to him. And they kind of have to do it at this point.
Absolutely. And again, not only have they not won a World Series since 2009, haven't made one. And a lot of fans who laugh at Yankee fans are saying, oh, no World Series in 2009. Wah. Like, I mean, Red Sox fans are crying and they have two World Series since then. So I don't know why nobody's on them for crying as much as we are, but they haven't even been to one. The Yankees have not been to a World Series since 2009. They have not competed for a championship to the highest level since 2009. The Mets have been to a World Series since 2009. The Cleveland has been to a World Series since 2009. A lot of historic losers have made that final stage. You know how many World Series the Rangers have been in since 2009? Three. That's a team that, like, theoretically people are, oh, the Rangers never win. Throw them a bone. And you're right. They had no titles in franchise history until last year. But I mean, they're in the World Series thrice since the Yankees last appeared. The Tigers have been in the World Series. Teams you think of as just absolute lovable losers have done something the Yankees have not done since 2009. So they're long overdue for at least a pennant. Nobody wants to hear that, but this is a Yankees podcast. So sorry, you in fact have to. You chose to. We have a Blue Jays fan always in our Twitter replies who I muted at some point because I was just like, I don't need to read these. But he's always like, this is the most Yankees biased article I've ever seen. And it's like, you're on yanksgoyard.com, my friend. Like, absolutely, it is Yankees bias. You're 100% right. It's a blog about the New York Yankees, and you hate them, so you shouldn't be reading this content. If you're on this podcast, you hate this team, that's a bummer for you, but you can easily navigate to a different podcast. And with that, we wrap with a melancholy happy trails to Jonathan Loaisiga, who, stop me if you've heard this one before, is out for the full season. Needs surgery, might end his Yankees career because he's a free agent after this season. When they announced a flexor strain and immediate placement on the 60-day IL, I was pretty confident he'd be down for the season anyway. And then they announced the surgery the next day. It didn't exactly surprise me. Jonathan Loaisiga is injured every year. And Aaron Boone said as much last year in September, basically hinting that they were going to non-tender him, saying, yo, he's great when he pitches. He gives you good innings, but he's almost never available. And so you just can't count on him. And it really felt like he was hinting that that was going to be the end of the road. Not only do they bring him back, but they give lip service in spring to the idea that he's going to be the Michael King replacement. And we're going to throw him in multiple innings, which at the best aged article of all time on February 4th, I wrote, it sounds like self-sabotage. And looky here, he didn't make it to April 4th without being placed on the April 5th. He gets placed on the 60-day IL. They didn't even really stretch him out during the regular season. He didn't really get stretched out during spring training either, during which he was abysmal. He allowed at least one run in every appearance this spring. Great when he's healthy. If he's on your roster, you better have a backup plan. Can't rely on him and couldn't rely on him this year. They're losing a significant piece of the bullpen puzzle, but I have faith that they're going to be able to replicate him at some point. But that said, it does make the bullpen probably a bigger need at the trade deadline than it was before he goes down. But for everyone who's followed this team, you can't have approached this trade deadline like you trusted him to make it through the season anyway. So you should have prioritized the bullpen, and now you're probably just going to have to do it more plainly.
Yeah, I have two thoughts on this. One, obviously, we know it's the Garrett Cole scenario. What is Garrett Cole's status? The other thing is we have the classic Cashman, Scott Efros, baby. Scott Efros is back this summer. That's the trade deadline addition, which, I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love to have Scott Efros back, but that's a guy who hasn't pitched in over a year. Like, I mean, who knows what we'll get if he does come back. God only knows if he's coming back. So that I could also see is them spinning it off like that. All things considered, if Cole comes back and he's healthy, I'd assume that pushes Luis Gil to the pen, which I think is a great arm to have in the pen. That's another guy we talk about, like unsung guys. I think he's been fantastic. He's only given up 3 hits in 2 outings. The walks are always concerning. He's walked 7 guys already, which is not great, but he's got the strikeout stuff still. Coming off of Tommy John, like that's about all you can really ask for from a young kid. So I'm happy to see him doing well, but that's a guy who obviously he could be a multiple innings guy and really have that wipeout stuff where he just can be a shutdown pitcher for you. But again, you can't bank on that until you know for sure that Cole is back and he's himself. But I'm always a proponent of adding an arm at the deadline, especially with the way the Yankees like manage games and Aaron Boone manages games. Like he has a generally quick hook with almost every starter outside of Cole. And when he's tried to have a quick hook with Cole, like Cole has to yell at him for him to not take him out of the game. So I just think when you do that and then you're going into, hopefully you're making the playoffs, you kind of have to have the extra arms. Otherwise we're going to see like we've seen in previous years where the same guys are pitching 3, 4, 5 games in a series. And eventually they're not going to be lights out every single time. We saw it happen to Chad Green, who was fantastic during his Yankees tenure. We've seen it happen to plenty of guys. And so eventually the more arms you have that you can trust, the better. Right now, we mentioned it earlier in the show. Like there's a few guys that like they pitched well. I'm like, oh, maybe this will be a guy you could trust. But right now you probably have 2 in the pen that you like are really like, hey, like Hamilton and Holmes. And then after that, it's like, I really don't know anybody else that I can just be like, I really want that guy in this spot. So that's concerning. So I think if you get to the deadline, like even if Cole doesn't come back and Heal is your 5th starter for the rest of the year, like maybe you're still adding one of each. Maybe you add a starter and you add a reliever. But I think the bullpen, just with the way the Yankees, it's years now at this point, have managed the way they go about starting pitching when you have young starting pitching. Like you need guys that you can rely on to pitch in the 6th, 7th, 8th inning. Like it's not going to just be, oh, we just need a bridge to Clay Holmes. Like you need a tunnel to Clay Holmes. You need 50 people to get there. So I think that it has to be something they consider. And it also has to be something they consider how much they're willing to give up. They gave up a ton for Efros because he was under team control for multiple years. And it's kind of backfired because he hasn't been able to pitch for any of those multiple years. So I think they have to think about, you know, who are we adding? What type of pitcher are they? Are they generally healthy? Are we giving up way too much for more team control? Are we just going to go all in for the season? Obviously, we're way too far away to consider that. But like, depending upon what their record is at the deadline, that's stuff that they're going to have to consider before making a trade in this scenario.
100%. And if I'm removing someone from the rotation, objectively, like without thinking about future fits, it's going to be Nestor at this point in time. But when I'm thinking about prioritizing the bullpen itself, I would rather go to Luis Gil in a close game mm-hmm. than Nestor Cortez, as long as he can get that control under control a little bit, because the stuff just is going to play up in the bullpen. 100 effortlessly already plays up pretty well in the rotation. So I can only imagine how disgusting Luis Gil would be in the bullpen. I don't want to put him there undeserved, but if he's approaching an innings cap and Cole is healthy mm-hmm. and the Yankees did get a deadline starter, then I'm totally game with strengthening the bullpen that way. But Heal, Efros, I mean, still get me one more and then I'll be extremely confident. Because Tommy Canley is another guy who, look, great if he's here. I absolutely can't trust that he will be. And at no point will you catch me being like, well, Canley will be back in 2 weeks. He's still harboring an injury from last year. So best of luck to Tommy Canley, and I'll take the asset when I can get it. But at this point, he's probably more of a clubhouse asset than he is a guy who you can trust.
I think the other thing with Heal too, if you move him to the bullpen, he's a guy you almost exclusively would have to bring in clean innings because of the walk issues. So that's something you have to consider too. It's like you need to get out of a jam. You can't go to Luis Gil because he might just walk the first two guys. Like, and that's his huge drawback right now. But he's been great everywhere else. But it's like, you can't run that risk if you bring him into a game with one out and a guy on second. Like, you can't have him load the bases. So he's a guy, it's like, okay, we can use him, but it has to be, okay, he's starting the 7th inning or he's starting the 8th inning or whatever it ends up being. Yeah. And sometimes the way baseball, it doesn't perfectly work out like that every time you need somebody to come into a game. So I do agree with you. I would love him to stay in the rotation for the whole year. Personally, I think like he could be one of those future pieces, but you know, he's on an innings limit. So if he's going to be on an innings limit anyway, instead of shutting him down for the year in like late August, let's have him be able to pitch the entire season too, would be helpful.
And if they're in a position to go to the playoffs and prepare for the postseason, then I would like to see him in the bullpen in August and September.
Yes, that's a good point.
At some point, because he is probably not getting a playoff start. Man, who knows? I don't know. He's been great so far.
Yeah, you never know.
You never know, but you're going to – in the playoffs get weird. Guys throw three innings. A guy comes in after that guy and throws three more innings. Like, you're going to have funky stuff. It'd be nice to see him get his head right. He already got a talking to yesterday when the – management was like, hey, don't show up Angel Hernandez. He's an absolute lunatic. Like, he's going to make your life hell. So hopefully he learns lessons as the season goes on, and they have some ground to play with in August and September. It would be nice. We don't know. We don't know how the season's going to turn out at all. But if they do need to prepare for October, they're probably going to have to start in August and September instead of waiting until the very last minute and then just saying, hey, you're in the bullpen now. Because like you said, that control and command is going to dog him his whole career, probably. He's not just going to turn into a strike-throwing machine. You can improve, but you never just shake it entirely. So we'll see what happens. Well, let's all go stare at the sun. Shout out to everybody who joined us on this show live again, 2 o'clock Eastern, every Monday, every Thursday. Adam Weinerb, you can find me on Twitter at Adam Weinerb. You can find us on all podcast platforms. And Peter, thanks for joining. Peter Dewey, where can everybody find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at PeterDewey2, and you can find my stuff, most of my main written content on BetSided, fansided.com/BetSided. And yeah, I'm a occasional guest here on the Yanks Go Yard podcast. Adam always is great having me on, so excited whenever I get the opportunity.
It's a fun time. It's a good time, and the show is more fun when the Yankees are 8-2, although the listeners might disagree because they do like when we go nuts, but I would much rather be winning baseball games and stressing a little bit less. So always a joy to have you on. Thanks for joining me as always, Peter. We'll be right back here. Thomas Carinazzi will be back on Thursday. Until then, we'll see you.
Prime Day es el 16 y 17 de julio. Con las ofertas épicas exclusivas para miembros Prime, recibe el reconocimiento que tanto mereces.
Wow, gracias. Ni siquiera preparé un discurso.
Quisiera agradecer a mi familia, que siempre necesita cosas. También a Sam, mi repartidor, por entregarme todas mis ofertas increíbles tan rápido. ¡Te adoro, Sam! ¡Mua!
Compra ofertas en electrónicos, hogar y más este Prime Day, del 16 al 17 de julio.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.